will be having presentations this morning from the department on the operations division, the state controllers division, and human resources services division. Do you have any comments or words of wisdom for us before we begin?
Mr. Chairman, maybe just to mention that in front of you is a memo from the co-chairs on the 2% reprioritization for your reading pleasure as we get into work sessions and the like. The department has also replied to yesterday's questions to you with a letter from the director to the committee. We suggest that if you have, read it into your pleasure, and if you have any additional questions, keep the proceedings going. If you call here the director or his staff after the hearing.
Okay. Good morning.
Welcome. Good morning, Chair. My name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. The first on our list today is a presentation by Brett West of our Operations Division. Brett, I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett West. I'm the administrator of the Operations Division at the Department of Administrative Services. Our presentation starts on page 131 of your binder behind the Operations Division tab. The Operations Division basically exists to support the rest of the Department of Administrative Services by coordinating budget development, providing accounting services, contracting. We do statewide or we do agency-wide desktop computer support and those types of things that agencies need to function day to day. We also provide payroll services to 23 small boards and commissions, including aviation, the Department of Community College and Workforce Development, the Real Estate Agency, and we provide desktop support to 11 small agencies, including Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and the Criminal Justice Commission.
I'm going to find my attention straying from the rest of your presentation until I know the answer to the question I'm going to ask. When you say budget development and execution, tell me what the execution piece of it means.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we help the divisions track their budget expenditures along the course of the biennium so that they know where they're at in terms of expenditures versus budget. We also help them to understand, should they have any questions, and they don't, you know, what's acceptable under state regulations or state law, those types of things.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And so you do this by contract for some of the smaller agencies, do you not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we don't provide that service for some of the smaller agencies. The State Controllers Division does that.
Okay, what I'm trying to get to, Mr. Chair, is that I just recently have gotten quite a surprise about a state agency budget that's completely upside down. And it is one of the little agencies, and so I will resist the temptation to pounce on you like a tiger. You're the wrong guy.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I appreciate it.
Good. Well, that puts the right guy on notice. What I'm trying to find out is at the point that DAS is providing services to the little agencies, how come we get to a point where there's a crisis? I'm just trying to understand the methodology for how often you have them in and hold their hand and explain to them they're getting way, way, way off track and do corrective action earlier rather than later. So we'll have this conversation later. Thank you,
Chair Jensen. Senator Johnson, I am very interested to know which agency is in trouble if you would like to speak with me after the meeting.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
To do that.
Thank you. I will continue on page 132. That's a representation of the Operations Division org chart. Again, we provide the basic services. We'll talk a little bit later in the presentation about how the IRMD reorg package affected operations. Basically, it is to centralize those day-to-day operations with the Operations Division so that other parts of the agency can focus outwardly with other agencies and statewide activities. On page 133, some of our major accomplishments are outlined. We've earned the Gold Star Certificate from the State Controllers Division for the last 4 years, actually, both years of the biennium so far. We've had no reportable conditions in the Secretary of State's financial audits.
Excuse me, Mr. West. in relationship to that? Do you find these state Secretary of State financial audits to be probing, or what degree of reliability are you expecting me to, or this committee to, place on those audits?
Mr. Chair, I will speak to the last probably 15 years because I haven't been through an entire audit with DAS. I've been with the department for about 5 months. I have found in the past, though, that the Secretary of State's office in my past jobs have asked some pretty tough questions. They're looking for things like fraud, problems with internal controls. So I would say that for the purposes of this report, they're looking at high-level financial information. And I'm actually proud of the fact that the team that I've inherited was able to make it through both audits without any reportable conditions. Those audits are really about the proper statement of the state's financial statements. So that's our part of the bigger overall effort.
Representative Crummell, you're chomping at the bit.
I don't know about chomping at the bit, Mr. Chair, but thank you. That does beg for a follow-up question, though, and that is, are these audits part of the state's comprehensive audit and financial report that's done annually to and sent to the feds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, yes. That's what they are, the part of the statewide comprehensive audit.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
And when you have had those audits, because I know they are done on an annual basis, have there been any reportable conditions that have been noted on the agency during those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, not for the last 2 years. I don't know the history back beyond that, but I could take a look at that if you like.
I think it would be worth taking a look at, Mr. Chair.
We will follow up with that.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Thanks. A couple other things on that list that I think are important. The next to last bullet, we worked with state surplus and have actually instituted a better process for people buying both federal and state surplus property. It's much more secure and much more efficient than we've done in the past. And most importantly of all, I think, is the bottom bullet. We'll talk a little bit more about customer service survey results for my team in a bit, but we have been using those to really change the nature of our relationship and service that we provide to DAS divisions primarily. On page...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
I'd like to ask a question, if I may, on with regards to the state surplus. Mr. Wilson, do you also provide... West, I'm sorry. Do you also provide state surplus services for local government where they can bring surplus materials in and have you actually market and sell those for them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I know we work with local governments. I'm not sure if they bring things in for us to use, but the State Services Division will be up, and they're the division that actually administers the program. They could respond to that more directly for you.
Okay. And in a follow-up, that they can, if they can kind of prepare for that also, if I may, Mr. Chair, with regards to that, if we do provide that for local government, what do we charge them? Is it a percentage, or is it are things on consignment? Just a little bit of information about the thing.
Okay.
We'll bring that back, Mr. Chair.
If I could, Representative, could you make sure you get speak into the mic? You dropped in and out of that. That's fine now.
Okay.
Thank
I will.
Thank you.
On page 134, you'll see, as other divisions, our work ties in with the overall strategic plan of the department. The next several pages talk about specific actions that we've taken with the operations division to help implement that plan. On page 135, a big issue that we want to continue to focus on is ensuring that division customers are kept apprised of issues and actions that may affect them. That's one of the results that we got out of the last customer service survey. We were surprising people. Plan on not doing that again. We want to deliver timely and accurate information, and we've also established DAS IT Management Council so that all divisions within the agency and all customers within the agency can have a voice in the direction that we'd set for information management technology. On page 136, we are responsible for coordinating the internal policy process, and we want to make sure that we do that in a collaborative way. And again, we pull groups together and get feedback from around the agency to make sure that we're heading in a direction that makes sense for them, both business-wise and just pragmatically. Our efforts around efficient and effective government infrastructure, I think the one I'd like to highlight is at the bottom of page 138, providing financial reports that assist managers in making prudent policy decisions. We work very closely, our budget analysts on our team, with division administrators to make sure that they know what their position is, both budgetarily and financially from a cash perspective. And then finally, on page 139, the things that we're striving for in making sure that government is adaptable is protecting the state's information assets and systems, the state's payroll system, and statewide financial management application. Maintenance are part of my team after the IRMD reorg, and we're looking to advance sustainable business practices in government. You'll see on the next couple of pages that the two primary agency-wide measures that we impact are customer service, and on page 142, the IT governance piece. I touched on that just briefly a moment ago. Our efforts really are to roll up to the bigger statewide efforts in those areas. For the operations division specifically, on page 143, you'll see that excellent customer service is really what we strive for. Our team was at 67% and lower in positive responses when we had the survey results a year ago. I'm hopeful those numbers will go way up this time around. The survey is out currently. I think closes next week, if I remember properly. We've worked hard with our customers to make sure that they're getting the best customer service that we can provide.
Could I begin here, too? I guess for me with this, it'd be helpful if I had a little more specificity about, you know, we've got an actual of 67% in the overall as far as timeliness, we've got a 67%, et cetera, et cetera. With the specific steps that have been taken to address that so that we are moving, so that we anticipate moving more toward what our target might be. I do applaud you're putting the target at least at a mediocre B, you know, in a grade sort of thing. Would like to have had a plus as a target, but, you know, we'll, from where we were starting, why, that's okay.
Chair Jensen, I can actually speak to some of the things that my team specifically is doing. Reforming the IT Management Council so that customers throughout the agency get provide input into changes we want to make policy-wise or technology-wise. My management team has met with a couple of the division management teams so that we get to hear what their issues are and vice versa. This was not always the case, we always make sure that divisions know the actions that we're contemplating before we actually take them. We don't want to surprise them by saying, you know, here's a bill for X number of dollars, for example, for a service you didn't ask for. Those are the kind of things that my team is doing so that we can help bring the overall number up. And I think you'll find that other divisions are doing the same types of things. We're also looking outward, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute, but making sure that agencies are involved. Most of our work is with division customers, but we also work with agencies in setting rate development and things like that. We want to involve them more in the future. In my last job, I had the benefit of being on the other side of the table when DASA's agency request budget was built. Agencies were allowed to, or were asked to come in and provide input in the development of DASA's budget. As a customer, that felt great, and we were actually listened to. We want to continue that process in the future. On page 144, you'll see our prioritized list, basically broken down into the three large components: operations, which is all of the financial, contracting, personnel, payroll pieces. Technology support center is the help desk and technology purchasing piece that we provide for the agency. And enterprise application services supports the payroll system, the state financial management application, the statewide Linus system for tracking legislative bills, and those types of things. Page 145, you'll see that the two primary drivers of our budget are service level needs of DAS divisions and business process review and refinement. A specific piece of that is, as I came into the agency, the challenge given to me by Director Ball and Deputy Director Chris Kautz was to take a look at the billing systems that we use to charge agencies for things like fleet, rent, all of those different types. We have more than a dozen different billing systems, and my goal over the next year is to review those, see how we can bring those all together to make life a lot easier for agencies. We know there's a lot of time spent out there on processing those bills, and we want to do everything we can to help agencies be more efficient in that process. Page 146, primarily, as you can see on 147, it's fee-for-service. Most of those charges are to other DAS divisions. That's where our funds come from. We want to be responsive to their needs because of that. On page 148, you'll see how our budget breaks down, primarily personal services, but nearly 27% services and supplies. And because of the nature of the team, most of those are data processing costs, licenses and maintenance fees, and those types of things for technology. Page 149 shows where we were last biennium compared to the governor's recommended budget. And again, that growth is because of the IRMD reorg package, getting two new teams. If that reorganization package hadn't happened, we'd actually be at about $9.6 million and down one position. So trying to make that work well for the agency. Quality improvement efforts, we've talked about a number of those already. I want to make sure that we touch on staff development. I think one of the issues that all agencies are facing is succession planning and finding talent. We want to make sure that the good people we have in the operations division, and we have a lot of good people, get the opportunities and the training they need to move up and become as successful as they want to be. The future direction pieces on page 151 are more of the same in a lot of ways, but since I've only been on the job less than 6 months, current and future are pretty much wrapped up together as we move forward. But more transparency in DAS processes is a major piece of what we're trying to do, and stakeholder participation in everything that we do. Page 152 shows some more detail on the IRMD reorg. I touched on that several times, so I won't go into a lot of detail, but you can see the budget there, the number of positions in FTE coming to my team. IT governance, key performance measure number 8, is one of the primary measurements of how well this works. Package number 453 is our effort to help with agency-wide and statewide, especially statewide performance management. We transferred one vacant position that we don't believe we need any longer. We're requesting that it be transferred to budget management. George Naughton talked about that yesterday. I guess that helps keep performance measure number 1, customer service, because we're trying to help everybody out to the extent we can. And then finally on page 157, I shouldn't say finally, there's one page after that. We'll be talking next week about the miscellaneous distributions piece of what the operations division does. We're scheduled to talk about that on Wednesday of next week. There are hundreds of millions of dollars that come through the department for lottery distributions, cigarette tax distributions to counties, those types of things. That takes up a good deal of our work, and as we said or indicated this morning, We don't keep any money for any of the lottery distributions. That's part of the base assessment that we charge agencies. And you'll find out next week that we get 60 cents per county for all of the other distributions that we do. Not a whole heck of a lot of money. And then finally, our efficiencies on the last page. We would, if necessary, reduce our personnel division by one position. The real impact of that is that we've added the state data center with 149 new positions, potentially others if the governor's recommended budget is adopted, without asking for any more FTE in these core functions. We think we can accommodate that by streamlining our processes, but losing a position would put a bit of a strain on the personnel division as we try to make sure that we're doing all the proper things in terms of getting people into the system, getting them paid properly, having their evaluations, and so forth. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll close unless there are questions.
Okay, do you have any questions for Mr. West? Almost sacrilegious, you understand, to close ahead of your scheduled time, committee. So, Mr. Representative Crummell is going to help you out here.
I do what I can, Mr. Chair, to keep us on schedule.
Yeah.
And not a minute before.
Okay.
On page 152, thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 152, Mr. West, you're talking about transferring the 39 positions to operations, and those are coming from IRMD or the new enterprise systems. And that transfers $10 million. You said that that's what accounts on back a few pages earlier for the growth in your budget. Is there an actual increase in this amount of money, or is that the same amount that would have been over in IRMD? And are there any increases wrapped up in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, the only increases in there are for the standard inflationary adjustments that all budgets get. There's no enhancements, and in fact, one of the positions that used to be part of the Enterprise Application Services section is being transferred to the State Controller's Division so that they have a business analyst on that team to work with us more directly.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
You mentioned a the customary sorts of increases. Can you tell me what those are?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, generally those are things like increases in salaries that are negotiated with the legislature or through contract negotiations, inflation on the standard S&S items. I think that's probably all for that team, though there may be a few others. I don't think so.
Let them know a little bit about it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, S&S is services and supplies. I know better than to use acronyms. I'm sorry about that. Things in that category, the big drivers for us are increases or decreases even in license and software maintenance, any kind of increases in data processing charges because of changes in the state data center costs for mainframes. General office supplies, those types of things.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may, one more?
One more.
And with regards to the increase this year that all budgets are going over, what is the percentage and what's the basis of that percentage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I don't recall what the standard inflation adjustment is. It's part of the standard package, and we could get that for you so that I don't misstate it here.
My name is Representative Crummell. The standard inflation factor is 3.1%, and that applies to most services and supplies items. Let's see, capital outlay, and that rate is derived from the gross domestic product price deflator.
Based on which city?
That I do not know.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up on the Chair's question concerning key performance measures. These are new budgets for me, so if I'm asking redundant things, I apologize. First off, your customer base, I assume, is for the most part other agencies inside government. And if I'm incorrect about that, correct me. But the question is, how are you gathering your information? How are you gathering your data? Is it phone calls? Is it surveys sent out that are followed and tracked? And tell me how you're getting that information in.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, there are two answers to who the customers are, I think. Generally, for DAS, it is primarily other state agencies. For the operations division, it is primarily other divisions within DAS. We send out customer service surveys to our customers. I'll talk about the operations division piece specifically. We ask for a list of from our help desk people of the agencies that they support that are outside of DAS. We ask for the same list for payroll, and then sent the online customer service surveys out to those external customers and then to all of our internal customers. The same type of thing happened for the agency-wide and for other divisions, and they can speak to that better than I can.
Excuse me. Brett, maybe explain to the committee the specific customers. Give them some examples of people that you consider the direct recipient of services that you provide.
I certainly can, Mr. Chair, Senator Bates. Again, for me personally, it's the divisions, but also those agencies that I mentioned at the first part of the conversation, Department of Aviation, whose name doesn't trip off my tongue, I'm afraid, the Real Estate Commission, those types of agencies that we actually do payroll services for, hands-on payroll services, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, Criminal Justice Commission, Landscape Contractors Board, those are agencies that we actually support their desktop applications and PCs. So it would be to those customers that we would send out the Operations Division notification of the survey. Once we get those back, we can actually track in detail by not just the Operations Division. Mr. Chair. Track not just by the overall Operations Division, but I can track by unit, payroll unit, accounting services, budget, to see how each of those are actually doing. And I have with me in the back a copy of the report that's generated. It gives me quite a bit of detail so that I can follow up pretty specifically on issues that are identified.
Follow up. The information you get back, is that blinded? Is it anonymous?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I believe that it is, though I haven't been in the I haven't been down deep far enough in the survey to know if it's actually identifiable. I know that one of the questions is, are you a DAS employee? So for the most part, my agency knows where we're getting it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as a recipient of the notification and request to respond to the survey, it's an online survey, and all the divisions of the department are there, and you click on which one you've had contact with, and are you a DAS employee is one question. Another question is, are you classified, management, or exempt service? And that's about as far as it goes as to where you sit in state government. If you're a state employee, DAS employee, then your position within what agency. It may ask a branch of government also. I don't quite remember that. But
as I would understand it, then, it is basically blind.
It is.
People can give a pretty honest opinion.
Yep, as long as there's not a camera on my
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we got some pretty honest opinions for my team a year ago.
I would like to see some of those honest opinions.
I'll bring you a copy after I'm finished.
Thank you.
Chair Jensen, maybe I would suggest that we could provide you the results of the 2006 survey so that the specific results, so all the committee members could have that.
That would be appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. West. And with no other questions, okay, Senator. Yeah, I'll ask a question later.
Okay. Thank you very much, and we came right on the button with utilizing those questions. So, and next up, I think we have John Radford, the State Controller's Division. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is John Radford. I'm State Controller. We're going to talk about the State Controller's Division budget this morning, so I'll take you through our slides this morning. I'm starting on page 159.
Please.
Chair Jensen, thank you. The purpose of the State Controller's Division is to manage our statewide. I'm going to take you from, an agency perspective now to a more corporate perspective. So this is a statewide perspective. Our main purpose, main function in life is to manage our government financial systems, and this is probably in the key areas of accounting, financial reporting, and payroll. You can see on page 159. We've cited some ORS chapters. On page 160, it's a quick and brief overview of the organization of the division. You can see a section there for division administration and then five lines of businesses. And slides 161 and 162, I'll mention briefly something about each of those lines of business. Division administration, starting on page 161, pretty much it's a small section directed at providing leadership, control, focus, and supervision over the entire division. Our Oregon Statewide Payroll Services section owns and operates on your behalf the statewide payroll system. That is a green screen mainframe system. It's 22 years old. We service about, just to give you an idea in scope, we produce about 45,000 annually W-2s, which we just issued here just recently. So for about 45,000 members of the workforce. Statewide Accounting and Reporting Services, that unit is a policy unit that provides interpretation of national accounting standards, national policies. We interpret that. And then we also in that division prepare a statewide financial report for the state annually. Moving to page 163, major accomplishments. You can appreciate, I'm sure, the changes that occur periodically throughout the year regarding national accounting standard changes, changes in federal laws, changes in state laws. And that's primarily, you can understand that the impact of those changes impacts systems as well as policy training and reporting. So we do that from a perspective of national professional accounting standards, financial reporting standards, also any changes in federal and state laws. Also the state comprehensive annual financial report, which is produced annually. We pay a lot of attention to that. It's a long and complex process. Our goal is to have it produced on time annually and receive a clean audit opinion. And lastly, I would mention that over the past couple of years, we've had opportunities to be involved in providing consulting and kinds of assistance over the last couple of years. Public Employees Retirement System, for example, the Department of Human Services is another example, and more recently, Employment Department. On page 164, you've seen that slide before, articulating four DAS goals. On page 165, customer service, of course, are probably key there, is collaboration with state agencies over the creation and application of accounting policies, processes, and procedures. We can't do this in a vacuum. We have to do this in consultation with state agencies. They are the group that is primarily on the front lines implementing policy and process and procedures. And that involves some training as well as communications around information. On page 166, you can see we take very seriously the Oregon Accounting Manual. That is the primary policy document that distributes accounting policies, processes, and procedures statewide. Audit findings, particularly from the Secretary of State's office and from state internal auditors, are very useful to us in terms of producing changes that improve the system overall statewide. Page 167, we pay a lot of attention to system controls and data integrity and compliance with both federal and state laws. We are probably the program that is most audited in state government, and so we pay attention to those audits. We work very closely with Secretary of State's auditors. Regulatory mandates, this gets back to compliance again, particularly around national accounting standards and federal and state laws. On page 168, maintenance of our statewide core payroll and accounting and data mart systems. You can imagine or have an appreciation for the complexity and the cost of replacing these systems. These are large structural core accounting, payroll, and data mart systems. We take those investments very seriously. Page 169, training is a very important element to us, particularly when it gets to payroll professionals and accounting professionals out in state government around understanding theory, but as well as how that theory gets applied in systems. So that's an important element for us. And then finally on page 170, we pay a lot of attention to security. So we have security processes built in our applications, access security, and we monitor those annually. We produce a security report, and we review very closely findings of the Secretary of State around security issues. So it's a key for us with respect to data integrity. Key performance measures on 171, that is a statewide slide on page 171 and 172. And later in the presentation, you'll see stats from the State Controller's Division. On page 173, one of our key performance measures, and at the DAS-wide level, is to achieve a certificate of compliance achievement in financial reporting excellence. That's a process that we submit our financial statements to the Government Finance Officers Association annually. They have a process where that report is distributed to three similar organizations, city, county, state, school districts around the country. Those three individuals independently review our financial statements, and then collectively they provide feedback to us for improvements, and we take those improvements and apply those every year. On page 174, our performance measures related to the DAS performance measures. You can see on page 175 the structure that we go through in terms of establishing our priorities. I would call your attention to the bottom of that page, and that's pretty much well thought out by our staff, and we have a lot of substance behind these. We pay particular attention to our regulatory environment, including national accounting standards, the application of state and federal laws, contractual obligations, for example, in the area of payroll. We have to meet union agreements, that kind of thing, labor bargaining agreements. Data integrity and reliability of our statewide systems is very important to us. And then general management services and risk and efficiency and effectiveness measurement or management. You can see that on that page. 176, budget drivers. Changing technologies, and this is kind of a long-term thought. So as you look at changing technologies that are applied over long-term, we pay particular attention to that, and particularly with respect to the investments that we've currently made in state government with respect to our core systems and how that changing technologies might affect and particularly affect future investments. New and changing rules and regulations, costly to change. Policies, processes, procedures, training, financial reporting when we have changing rules and regulations. Agency reorganizations have an impact. We have to deal quite extensively with agencies when there's consolidations or reorganizations involved. Staff turnover is an issue. The more staff turnover there is, the more training cost there is, the more errors and the more rework that has to be completed. And, of course, the age of our current systems is also something that we're cognizant of. Page 177, sources of revenue. I want to take you through this just a second here. Our beginning balance is $5.4 million. We have administrative service charges. Those are basically allocations or assessments to state agencies. Payroll checks and warrants and automatic clearinghouse transactions. Those are direct deposit kinds of transactions. Those are charges for specific services. And then agency charges for direct services are related to our small agency group. I'm going to talk about that in a slide or two, and it's important to note that we're beginning that beginning balance of $5.4 million is used in our setting our current rates. So I'll mention that in a second or two. On page 178, you can see the distribution between our charges for services. Those charges for services, for example, are allocated state agencies through a consumption mechanism. So they consume payroll checks or payroll payments. They consume state warrants, for example, payments to vendors and ACH transactions. And we're charged the state agencies on a per unit basis in that area. The other large area, the admin and service charge, those are assessments out to state agency, particularly around policy, where there's not a kind of a consumption basis to charge them for. So those are allocated, usually based on FTE and budget amounts. On page 179, you can see the distribution between services and supplies and personal services. Most of that services and supplies are in fact, the vast majority of that services and supplies are charges for data center operations and programming services.
Just a point of curiosity, do you ever, when you're talking about based on consumption, charges for services like payroll and those sorts of functions, do you ever run a comparison with what payroll for, say, a small agency would cost if they contracted with ADT? The point that I'm making is that you guys are kind of a captive audience. It's not like a little agency has a lot of choices. They either do it internally, do their payroll and some of their other functions, or they contract with you guys. And I'm just trying to see if you've got a mechanism to double-check, are you competitive?
Representative Jensen, Senator Johnson, members of the committee, I have two stories around that. I'll be brief. First story is about 10 years or so ago, one of the states conducted a national survey to they were thinking of replacing their payroll system. So they conducted a national survey asking information about the ways in which states operate their payroll services, their investment, their costs, etc. We completed that survey, and when we got the results back, about 25 states participated in that survey. In that survey, Oregon's cost per paycheck, the unit that we charge state agencies, was about $3 or so a check, a payment. The next state, we were second to the lowest. The lowest state was West Virginia at about around $2 a check. Now, West Virginia pays their state employees twice a month. So if you let me pay our state employees twice a month, we'd have the lowest cost. Now, that was about 10 years ago. I have no current information, or nothing would lead me to believe that we're still not currently one of the lowest cost states in the nation in terms of our payroll per payment cost. About I'm going to say about on another story, related story, about 5 or 6 years ago, one of the legislative committees brought in ADT from Seattle, and the ADT person appeared with me before the committee and talked about payroll operations and what the private sector might be willing to provide. We were directed to return and talk together about that. We went over to my office, and I suggested to the ADT person that I would be happy to give him my entire budget. I'll give him all the cost of people, the office, the phone costs, the overhead allocations from DAS. I'll give him the software. We would run the, he could run the software on the state's mainframe, and over a period of 5 to 7 year contract, if he could extract 15 or 20% profit, I'd be more than happy to work with him to do that. And he was to do some analysis and come back and reappear before the legislative committee. We asked him three times to come down to do that, and he wasn't interested in doing that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
In a building that quickly jumps to erroneous conclusions, my question was not motivated by a desire to think of privatization. I was just curious, being a former agency director and knowing that there aren't a lot of choices where you can go to buy services, I was just trying to get a flavor for how competitive you are, and you have answered that question. I'm not. There's no subtext here, yeah. No hidden question.
Yeah, Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, nothing taken by that. We just have a number of kinds of situations that have occurred over the years that have given us a pretty solid indication that we're fairly competitive. We've had agencies, for example, try to leave state government, go off on their own, set up different kinds
They're
of structures.
That.
set up different kinds of structures. And once they got into the cost of their payroll, they'd like to go back on the state payroll system, but they've changed so much of their structure, we can't have them back in the system.
I would just share anecdotally, I ran a division of ODOT that then became a freestanding agency, and we tried to go outside and found that it wasn't very satisfactory, and we were able to purchase services for the Department of Aviation the cheapest from you guys.
Right. Representative Pratt.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm almost afraid to ask this question because, you know, this is a whole new process for me, and so I don't want to sound really stupid, but in the story you were telling earlier about us, you charging about $3 per check, which would be once a month, and the lower state charging $2 per check, and yet paying twice a month, it seems like that would be higher to me as opposed to lower.
Chair Jensen and members of the committee and Representative Beyer, it's the situation where we pay about, I'm going to say around 37,000 payments a month, 38,000 payments a month, and our cost per month is relatively fixed. So we'd be dividing 37 into our cost per month to get our per unit cost. Okay. If you let me pay those twice a month, it would be around, what, close to 80,000, 75,000 that I would be dividing into that number, which would cut my per check cost in half.
Okay.
You follow that logic?
Yes.
So we would go from $3 to $1.50, and in fact, we'd probably be cheaper than the lowest cost state that at least applied, or that at least gave us information on that 25 state survey.
Thank you.
Just to say, yes, Senator Whitson.
Jensen, in your charging paradigm here, you have, as I understand it, a general assessment based on FTE.
Senator.
A general assessment based on FTE, and then essentially an assessment based on past experience rating on how many times how much service the agency has used from your agency. Is that second component in any way a deterrent for agencies to use your services, because the more they have used your services, the more they get charged in the past rather than on a real-time basis? I mean, I'm thinking along the paradigm of the unemployment insurance, or workman's comp either way, you know.
Chair Jensen and Senator Whitsett and members of the committee, that's always a consideration with respect to the kinds of the laws of supply and demand here. What we're trying to do is we have some fixed costs that we've allocated into that per unit charge. We also have some variable costs allocated to that into that consumption model. So if they use more, they're consuming more of our resources. If they use less of our resources, that's an incentive for them to try to use less. That makes sense? So you're exactly right. They're incentivized just like the marketplace. Did I answer that question right?
Thank you, Chair Jensen. I understand that give and take. However, you're a service organization that is designed to help these agencies, and yet perhaps there's a deterrent in your charging mechanism. And instead of charging on real time for what you're actually using, if you have a history of using a lot, you get charged more, as I understand this. I would wonder if actually being charged a cost for service during on a real-time basis might be more appropriate.
Chair Jensen and Senator Whitsett, we evaluate those costs, every biennium, as part of the budgetary process. We aggregate all of our fixed and variable costs, and we know the volumes that agencies typically have utilized. And so it's a simple mathematical calculation to determine the per unit costs. We've done so in our payroll operation for many, many years. For example, our current cost per paycheck, per payment right now in payroll is $3.84. Our cost per warrant, this is the warrant that an agency would generate in the payment of a vendor, is $1.40 per warrant. And then to incentivize them to move to direct deposit, that charge is 94 cents per vendor payment. That's primarily on the vendor side, not necessarily on the agency side. So we think we've got a good correlation between costs and consumption of those resources. We're trying hard not to subsidize those costs in any way. Those are the actual costs of providing those services on a per unit basis.
Please proceed.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, I'll continue then on page 180. That is just simply a that shows you that all of our costs are reimbursed to us via other services through assessments and per unit allocations. On page 181, we start our budget cycle with an estimate of our beginning balance of $5.4 million, and then we added the charges for the services. Those are direct charges for consumptive services, and then the administrative and service charges. Those are primarily assessments. We built in an estimate of $200,000 in interest income. We have transfers out of nearly $900,000 for DAS overhead, which provides total available revenues or resources of $24 million. If you deduct then our projections around services and supplies and personal services, which total 23.6, almost 23.7, you can see that our ending balance is $332,000. Now, I point that out because next session, we've currently lowered our rates for state agencies in the 07-09 budget, but when we get to 09-11, we're now going to have to make up for that beginning balance that we've used in 07-09. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure that the committee understands that next biennium there's going to be some significant increases in rates being assessed to state agencies for this budget because we're using some available cash balances.
Mayor Johnson.
How difficult would it be for you to provide this committee with the fees that are charged to each one of the agencies?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, it wouldn't be very difficult at all. We can give you that list. We have that. By assessment and by estimated charges based on past history of volume consumption.
Respectfully, Mr. Chair, I would like that just because I think the display would be very instructive to see just how hard the agencies are getting hit for both consumed services, fee for service, as well as just the assessment to run DAS.
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, at least speaking for the State Controllers Division, we can get that for you.
Right.
Thank you, Senator.
Moving on to page 182, quality improvements. We're experimenting right now with some web-based training. We've, for many years, have updated our policies on the web. We're trying to expand the use of electronic payments. For example, the state of Oregon is at about an 84% penetration rate on direct deposit, 84%. And that is consistent nationally because, according to U.S. Treasury, about 10 to 13% of just general population is unbankable, unbankable term. So we've been told by corporate offices that just even to get to 90% penetration rate on direct deposit is a very positive achievement. So we're at about 84%. We're continuing to try to build on that. A lot of our effort is built around working closely with state agencies on ways that state agencies can lower costs and improve services, and oftentimes that means better uses of technology, and of course integrating with the state's accounting system is one of those areas that can be optimized for state agencies. We've recently installed an internal financial reporting software. That's not something that would be seen by anybody outside of our organization. It is a significant improvement internally in terms of quality and accuracy and that kind of thing. Revenue recovery via accounts payable vendor. Last session, I talked to you about a recovery on private sector kind of a contractor we hired to review payments, and they were looking for erroneous payments and that kind of thing. They reviewed about $12 billion worth of prior payments, and the way this works is they get a percentage of recovery. So they recovered about $1 million, and we paid them about 30-35% to recover that million. Out of an examination of $12 billion, they have very sophisticated proprietary software, and we don't pay them anything. They just get a cut on that recovery. We are currently working right now, coming at that process from a payable vendor side, from receivables that may be in those vendors that do business with the state, and trying to uncover the potential for recovery of some credits to us based on disbursements. This is a new private sector kind of an approach. It has not been attempted at any statewide level that I'm aware of. No state has done this before, and we're in the beginning stages of talking with the vendor about that potential. According to the industry, there's a potential because they think they can extract receivables out of vendors to the tune of about $2 million per $2 billion of spend, I think it is, something like that. And so we're exploring that possibility right now. And if it comes out, we'll be doing that over the next year or so. We also improved electronic statewide reporting of federal expenditures. We have some requirements for reporting to the feds, and we've done that electronically, utilizing our current core accounting system and our data mart, and it was done heretofore mostly manually. On our six-year plan on slide 183, we're continuing to spend time, of course, working with collaboratively with our customers in terms of customer service. We, of course, are continuing to maintain and enhance our core systems, accounting, financial reporting, and payroll. Of course, we are, because of the increasing attention being paid to identity theft, we've done a lot to clean up some of our records and files around identity theft information. We just got a couple more things we want to get taken care of in that area. And then a thing on the horizon coming up is new federal withholding mandates. This is a new federal law that's going to be implemented, I think, around 2010. And that requires us to withhold from vendors 20% taxes like we do on your paychecks. So, yes. So withholding for vendor payments is coming. It's currently being further discussed in Congress. But as of right now, this is moving forward, and this would require us to withhold 20% to vendor on vendor payments and report that and distribute those funds to the federal government, similar to how we withhold on state paychecks for withholding.
Is that a federal law now?
Chair Jensen and Dallas, yes, that's a federal law right now. It's to be implemented in 2010. Of course, all of the states are taking a look at that right now. We at the national level are working with several national associations to see what we can do to get that repealed. But as of right now, it's federal law. So that's on the horizon. Of course, we're trying to get that mitigated, if at all possible. We don't want to have to do that. That's a lot of cost and time and effort and expense for us. Our reorganization package on 184... optimally, we had about a 0.25 FTE working the business side of our data mart. The data mart is a server that we download information from our statewide accounting system, which is on a mainframe, and this provides desktop real-time access, not real-time, one-week-old information at the desktop to state agencies. So they can access that via almost any desktop software available. Is a very convenient and cost-effective way for financial reporting at the agency level. We had about a 0.25 FTE on that. We realized that wasn't sufficient from the business side. When the IRMD reorganization came about, there was an opportunity to identify a resource there, an available FTE, and move it over to the State Controller's Division to beef that up to a full-time FTE. And that actually was also reflected in the recent audit that the legislature conducted on the data mart.
Senator Johnson.
Let me make sure that I understand how this would work. If I'm a small agency manager and I'm trying to manage my budget, I'd be able to get into this, check cash flow, check balances. Is that the level of data?
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, that is absolutely correct. For example, for our small agencies that we provide services to, we are providing electronic reports that we control through the data mart to them, and I believe they go out every Monday morning to those small agencies.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So theoretically, this is a very powerful tool that a competent state agency manager would be able to access to be able to see if they were tracking on budget.
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, that's absolutely correct. And as you know, we've been pushing this in the Department of Human Services, and the staff over there under the leadership of Dr. Goldberg has been also pushing this on the inside of that organization to provide more of an information flow to a command and control structure around that very issue, budget management.
If I can respond, I've sat in all interim on those meetings, and I know that you have been of enormous assistance to Dr. Goldberg as he's trying to get his arms around what's going on within the management control and accounting control at DHS. I know you've been very helpful in those meetings, and I think that there's a Herculean effort underway at DHS to try to bring more control to their management processes.
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, members of the committee, yes, and I think this is a tool that is enabling them to do some of that.
But on a small budget, not nearly, DHS is a $2 billion plus or minus budget. That's enormously complex. I'm just trying to think for small agencies, there's very little excuse for not being able to manage accurately with these kinds of tools.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I would agree.
Thank you.
On page 185, this links to our this proposal here, or this package does link to our key performance measures, and these numbers that you see on slide 185 and 186 represent the State Controller's Division numbers and how that package links. And on the last slide, page 187, in terms of efficiencies, the proposal is reducing one FTE out of our state payroll system, which is predominantly devoted to training field staff. We have a lot of turnover in payroll staff, and updating payroll manuals and processes and procedures, that kind of thing. And then in our shared client services, which we provide those services to 25 or so small agencies, we added last session half FTE because of the workload. That workload continues in terms of the volume of transactions. And so that would be a half FTE in terms of an efficiency. So with that, certainly be happy to try to answer any questions.
I want to go back to slide 181, budget overview. And $5.4 billion, $1 million. We all wish it was $5.4 billion cash carry for into this budget year, I assume. And for the next legislature coming along, you're looking at 300,000, take some change, cash carry forward. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, that's correct.
And in order then to what you're doing, if I understand this whole process partially, you're taking and reducing some of the charges that you make and subsidizing that reduction with the cash carry forward.
Chair Jensen, that's correct.
And what was the rationale for spending that down so low?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, I think there's this administration, particularly this administration in the DAS agency, has been more fiscally responsible and more disciplined with respect to management of cash balances. Previous administrations allowed this cash balance to balloon for whatever reason. I have no idea. But this administration is taking a more disciplined approach.
And I certainly would applaud that, but I would wonder, and I guess this would go then to the director, if a little larger, we talk about having, in the whole system savings accounts, I wonder why on a more micro level that wouldn't have equal application.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, let me make sure I understand your question. If you're referring to savings on a statewide budget, like a rainy day fund,
I'm talking about your own the little rainy day fund here.
Okay. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, as John mentioned, we are trying to place more discipline on budgeting and accounting in this agency. And let me explain a little bit of what has taken place in the past so maybe you can appreciate this. There were some program areas in this department that spent money outside what they were appropriated by the legislative process. And there were other division and program areas that were used to fund those deficits occurred in other programs. We've healed that up. That is not occurring. As I mentioned in the overview and also from the director's office report to you during this hearing from a couple days ago, we've maintained stronger discipline in fiscal integrity, and we're able now to more accurately reflect the charges to state agencies with what is required in our budget. We do, as we move through this transition, we do have some ending balances that become beginning balances that exceed what is required in those program areas. To spend that down, we don't want to increase our fees because then we will diminish the purpose of our discipline. So we have to spend that money down and then more accurately reflect the cost associated with the service and the fees that are assessed.
I guess I understand that what you were saying and what the I'm just thinking that there's going to be some sticker shock come the next biennium, and of course since there are no secrets in this building, nobody should be surprised by that, but they will be anyway. It just leaves me with some concern. And this maybe is a question for Dallas on the preceding slide 180. Are we going to get some breakdowns of, this increase in $1.2 billion increase in this budget?
Oh, certainly, Mr. Chairman.
Is this available for us, or will it be available as we get in?
Actually, the detail is available in one of those big binders that was delivered
that's,
to you.
The
budget support document has a tremendous amount of detail. You can probably find that you will be able to find that information also, but at a little higher level in the budget document, I call it volume one of the two volumes, that if you look to the controller's division, you'll find a narrative and some explanation of it. There'll be a lot more detail in that secondary binder, but I think for your information, probably the first one would be the one to go to get a feel for the changes here in cost.
That's fine. Thank you, Dallas. I just note that it's significantly more than a 3% or 3.1% roll-up sort of caution. And I just want to check that out somewhere down the line before we get there. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Bain.
A couple questions real quick, Mr. Chair. You know, the ending balance question to me is always a difficult one because we're pretty good in the state government of not letting any good deed go unpunished. We just swept budgets for the last 5 or 6 years looking for ending balances, take them away. So an agency that does a great job, holds its costs down, comes in under budget, we penalize them. At the same time, you're trying to put in financial discipline for those areas that don't maintain their budget, go over budget, and you've got to deal with that from another source. So I understand the push and shove in this. And I'm a little concerned about taking your ending balances. I'd have a tendency to want to leave those in your budgets and reward good behavior and have a little cushion if things change at a later time. So that's just more of a statement. The other question I want to bring up, though, is, and two of them really, one is, and you don't have to answer now, what's your turnover rate like in your agency? Do you have a big turnover, small turnover? Do you have certain areas that haven't cost turnover? You're dealing with an area of government which knowledge and expertise obviously is very important, and losing people all the time could be really difficult for you. And the second question, completely unrelated, is I note that you are partially responsible, apparently, for accounts receivables for the state.
And we commonly in small business call it ARs. And it's a big part of our business, how fast they turn over and how quickly they age and what kind of a collection we make on those aging processes after 90, 180 days, whatever. I'd like to have some information on that if you can't, not right now, but later. I'd like to see what those ARs are doing, how big they are, how you're managing them, and what you're trying to collect on.
Chair Jensen.
Chair, thank you.
Chair Jensen, Senator Bates, members of the committee, two questions. One, thank you for that comment, because I am fortunate we have a terrific staff in our state controller's operation. It's hard to appreciate sometimes. We have about a 10% turnover, but we run that gamut from very professional CPAs and systems people to clerical staff, and so probably in more turnover in the clerical staff and lower ranks than in the upper ranks. Been very fortunate over the past 5-10 years to retain some very high quality and leaders, national leaders in our state controller's division here in Oregon. I'm very proud of them. The issue on accounts receivable, we provide an FTE that is in a coordinative role with state agencies. They're expected, or he is expected, to provide leadership direction, focus, control around the aggregate of accounts receivable collections and the management of our collection private sector contracts with collection staff inside those agencies. We have all the stats. We have a report that is annually provided to the Legislative Fiscal Office, and Dallas heads up that effort and provides that information to the legislature. We have a website that provides a lot of information on our receivables and the collection effort, et cetera, et cetera. We compare it to about 5 or 6, 7 Western states. We get an average on accounts receivable. We beat the average. But we can get all that information for you.
Thank you.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things that I just want to verify with regards to the vendor collected administrative fee, the VCAF. That's a percentage that's charged to the vendor. Is that then charged back by the vendor to the agency that the vendor supplies for?
Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, that's probably a better question for our purchasing organization, because that collection fee is involved in that operation. Not we have nothing to do with that collection fee.
Okay. Also, Mr. Chair, with regards to the beginning balance, I share Senator Bates's sentiment in terms of not penalizing our agencies when they are fiscally responsible and do the right thing. I'm just kind of wondering, and you don't have to answer now, John, but I'm just kind of wondering, would it make more sense to just hold the, and maybe this does it, but hold the fees the same as they currently are, and keep this as a budget line reserve, so that the economy were to tank or things were to go sideways on us or somewhere within the agency, you would have the opportunity to make up for that. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but just curious about that. And then the other thing that I would just like to point out, Mr. Chair, is that assessments and fees that the agencies pay, you know, one of the things that we're looking at here is with regards to these charges that are paid, that's only for this particular, so this $12 million that we see in his budget overview, that's only for services that the agencies receive from this particular division. Each division within the Department of Administrative Services also may have a fee or an assessment that they charge to the agency. So the actual overarching amount that DAS receives from the agencies for various assessments and fees could be quite a bit higher. And one of the things that I would be curious of, and you don't need to answer now, but one of the things that I would be curious of, when we add all of those together, what percentage of an agency budget ends up flowing to DAS for those purposes?
Representative, you will understand if I can kind of paraphrase the former United States Senator, you know, $12 million here and $15 million there, and pretty soon it runs into money. And I do appreciate that, and you will appreciate maybe that that's where I was, the thing that I was looking at, where I want to know how much of this is coming out of general fund sort of thing, because some, now it doesn't have to be general fund, I understand, but some of it is coming from general fund, though it appears in this budget as other funds. And, you know, yeah, a few million dollars here and there, and we got some real money going by the time we get through. So I think we'll save comments on that, Director Ball, if you don't mind, because we are out of time, but it will be a topic we will be discussing, I'm sure, some more. And Senator Johnson has a quick comment.
My request was for the total fees paid by agencies when you said you were going to summarize the agencies. So I want to know exactly how much all of them pay to you, not just by division. And I just wanted to make sure I had clarity in that. One last question. I don't know whether this falls within your purview, John, or not, but in managing contracts that are outstanding for the agency, is that within your portfolio? Okay.
Senator Johnson, no, we're not in the details of contract management.
What I'm trying to get to, and it's a question I think I'm going to sound like a broken record about, is we're all about performance-based budgeting here, and I am curious as to the contracts that state agencies have outstanding with private sector vendors where money flows through the agency and out for work being performed or is just passed through, how we can assure some rigorous discipline in making sure that there are performance measures on those contracts. And it's an area that we don't touch very often. So I'm very curious about the number of outstanding contracts an agency has, what the performance expectations are, how often those contracts are opened for renegotiation. During the time that I worked at ODOT, I saw dozens of them reopened, never to lower the contract amount. And so I'm going to ask that question regularly, and if that's not within your portfolio of responsibilities, I'll take a pass.
Okay. And I think we have, we're in the process of cheating the human resources, and maybe that was by design on the part of the director, too. So I think we better move along. We will have other times to discuss some of these. So thank you very much, and I do appreciate your chomping at the bit waiting to explain some of this to us, Lindsay, and we will be anxious to get those comments at another point. Ms. Wilson, would you come up, please? Go ahead, Lindsay.
And Chair Jensen, I appreciate the questions, because this is how we can get information exchanged, and so let's just keep it up.
Okay. And I would like to thank my two colleagues, Senator Bates and Representative Crummell, for having some concern about this ending balance, and that was exactly where my concern was with it.
It's a tough nut.
Yeah.
It's a fine, tough balance.
Yeah, it is. Ms. Wilson.
Great. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sue Wilson. I'm Administrator of the Human Resource Services Division in the Department of Administrative Services. We are one of those divisions within Department of Administrative Services that has a statewide focus. Most agencies have their own human resources office within their agency, and our job is to provide services that in that area that are more effectively supplied at an enterprise level. To that end, on page 190 is our organization chart. That gives you a little bit of an idea of how we are organized and the services that we provide. Our labor relations section is statutorily charged with collective bargaining for all state labor contracts. We do that centrally. We currently have 31 labor contracts with 10 different unions in the state. And then this unit also has a responsibility for managing those contracts and working with agencies on their labor relations issues. Our classification and compensation section administers, again, a statutorily required statewide classification system and compensation system. That includes looking at how jobs are classified, doing studies, and also doing market analysis on positions related to compensation. The Statewide Training Development and Recruitment Services is responsible for developing and delivering management development training and coordinating technical training for state agencies. They also conduct executive recruitments and diversity outreach and maintain statewide recruitment data. The HR Management and Consultation Section develops and administers statewide human resource policies and provides consultations to agencies then on the interpretation of those policies. They also serve as the human resources office for some of the smaller agencies and administer the Employee Suggestion Awards program. HR Systems, Services, and Audits maintains and manages our statewide data system that includes all personnel data for the state. We also provide centralized data and reconciliation for all PERS information as it relates to state employees and conduct compliance audits for state personnel policies. On page 191, our major accomplishments in the 2005-2007 biennium includes the full implementation of that centralized recruitment reporting and reconciliation services unit. That came about as changes occurred in the PERS law in 2003, requiring different forms of reconciliation and more frequent reconciliation. Rather than having it done piecemeal within the agencies, we worked with agencies. They asked if we could do that centrally. We developed a unit to do that. The Strategic Learning Initiative pilot project we also launched, and I'll provide some more information on that a little bit later. Also making our final transition from reliance on employee social security numbers and moving instead to an employee ID number for state employees so that we don't have social security numbers being bandied about.
Thank you for
Mr. Chair, you're welcome. We also were able to settle all of our labor contracts in the last biennium without going to arbitration. At the same time, we updated most of our personnel policies and also are taking strides again to lead statewide recruitment efforts. The strategic plan for Department of Administrative Services you've seen now a number of times, and you will see also how we have, starting on page 193, addressed those issues. Excellent customer service for us is a necessity. To be effective, because we work across state lines, we must be able to work closely with human resource managers and state agencies. We try to communicate very regularly with human resource staff, and we put a high priority on our staff being available for their questions. To that end, we've also instituted some measures, including a 24-hour turnaround for response to questions that come in. We may not always have the answer within 24 hours, but we will at least have had the discussion with the agency at that time. This becomes critical in a number of areas, including things like PERS reconciliation, where we need to make sure that information is into the system so it can be reconciled appropriately. Our website is also something that we are continuing to do some work on so that agencies can find our policies and other information, such as class and comp information. On 194, we also are trying to meet the information needs of our customers. The challenge of statewide programs is that we feel we need to be consistent. We are the state as one employer, and therefore we need to be fair and consistent in how employees are treated. So we have begun to create databases where we are putting interpretations of policy, working with the Department of Justice, so that we are giving consistent answers to all state agencies as questions arise. We're also working on standardized reporting so agencies can have reports that they know they can count on and will have information for them. To the extent possible, we also provide general information on our workforce that may be of interest to agency managers as they're doing their planning. Page 195, effective policies with clear directions. Managers and other employees who are not covered by collective bargaining contracts fall under the direction of our state personnel policies. So issue areas that are not included in contracts are also covered by state policies. So as some of our policies are related just to unrepresented management, others to all state employees. These affect the day-to-day operations of agencies, and so we have developed a number of methods to communicate early and often with these agencies. First, meeting with agencies to determine what policies they think we ought to be looking at, what adjustments need to be made, and then having a full focus group type approach when we have policies that we have drafted. page 196, efficient and effective government infrastructure. We believe that the value of a statewide program is that ability to leverage the resources that are available throughout the state and at the same time reduce program duplication. If every agency is offering the same training to its employees on the same topics, we're missing an opportunity for cost effectiveness and also to be delivering a consistent message across state government. So the state learning initiative, statewide learning initiative, involves most of the agencies and has a group jointly developing an overall course plan and curriculum for and resources for training coming from the various agencies. We find out who has what, who can do what training well, and build a curriculum out of that and share the trainers. This is currently in a pilot at this point in time with a course that's specifically for employees who are new to state government to try to give them as much information as we can about state government and bring them into the group.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Do you do any kind of analysis with, as I hear you talking about developing new curricula, any kind of analysis about the costs involved per agency for training? I can't tell you how often I try to reach personnel to deal with constituent issues, and this is not a criticism of Dr. Goldberg. I think it's just a statement of fact. And finding his DHS people in their field office is almost impossible. And for some of us that live at great distance from Salem, I'm trying to figure out you drive a day, you attend the meeting a day, and you drive home a day. And out of a five-day work week, that's 3 days customers aren't being served while you've driven to Salem to learn how to serve customers. And I'm just trying to figure out whether or not HR at DAS has done any kind of thoughtful evaluation of how much money could be saved if there was a better use of other technologies to do these trainings. And I'm not making a case to eliminate all face-to-face trainings because I think periodically it's good for convocations of colleagues to be able to share best practices and stuff like that. But I'm also trying to figure out how much time state people are on the road coming to Salem for training days.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we don't have a definitive study that will say this is how much we've saved. However, intuitively, I think we all know that that is certainly an opportunity. And to that end, I know that Department of Human Services is working extensively on doing more web-based training. That is something that we have done some pilot programs on. We have also, again, through the cooperation with other training entities, held training forums in different parts of the state. So we will send a trainer, DHS will send a trainer, another agency will send a trainer, and we will offer, say, in the Pendleton area or the Bend area or the Medford area, 2 or 3 days of training so that any state agency that's located in that area can send employees to a local training. And this has been, it's been very popular with the agencies. We've had very good turnout, and we want to look at continuing that type of thing.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair. Also a way to track training for its quality. There are lots of meetings where you have people parked in chairs, and what I'm curious about is how much they absorb. I can recall in my old industry, we used to have to take updated training, and they were online correct to 100 tests, and there was a record that the testing had actually occurred. There was a record that the person had corrected to 100. I mean, you do the test, you miss 60% of them. You sit there until you get them all. And what I'm wondering about is how do you judge how efficacious the training is or how engaged the people are, and do they emerge trained to a standard curricula that helps them actually deliver the services in the area where their job responsibilities are?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's a really interesting question, and it is one that we have struggled with. And in the strategic learning initiative that we are doing now in pilot, part of that is this is a partnership between the supervisor and the person receiving the training. We have feedback from the supervisor prior to the training in terms of what skills we think are needed. We check in periodically then with the supervisor as the training continues to find out what are you seeing on the job, what things aren't happening, this is what the person has had, have you seen a change, will this help with their work, to try to actually find out when they get back to their desk, what does it mean, how does it help. We can do that through also some surveying of the people who took the training. But right now we find working with, and this is part of the pilot, and we want to see what happens to find out when we include managers in that.
Mr. Chair, will you let me beat this to death?
Sure, because I want to beat on it a little bit when you get through.
You gave a presentation to Full Ways and Means, and in that presentation, if I remember correctly, you told us that one of the greatest risk areas for the state was the proliferation of discrimination lawsuits. It would seem to me that a standardized curricula across state agency employees that is a correct to 100, or you better demonstrate proficiency in that area, would be a prophylactic against some kind of suits, or at least would help ameliorate in the risk management area to know that every single person that collected a state check had been through some kind of training. And as long as we continue to be vulnerable and paying out these big settlements in, I think, completely unnecessary discrimination, if people are doing their job correctly, that would sure be an area that I would be interested in getting some additional feedback from you all as to what you're doing to ameliorate the seemingly endless risk.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that is something, and as I indicated in the previous Ways and Means presentation, we do work with Department of Justice and with risk management to try and find out those areas where we see risk occurring, the types of behaviors, the types of management systems that we have that may be vulnerable to that. We do include that into our training programs. Part of what we're trying to do in tracking these kinds of things is related to the data that's associated and tracking what a state employee has been trained in. Training records are probably not always as good as they should be. We're looking both through our HRIS system and through a learning management system to be able to say, here is something that you as an employee must have, and when you get it, it will go on the books, and we as agencies can track that. People moving from agency to agency, we don't know what they've had previously in their training. So, again, we're trying to get that to an enterprise level of information so that we can track that and do requirements just like you suggest.
I think retaliation and discrimination ought to be a sine qua non for state employment.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson hit on a point that I was going to ask myself, but I'd like to ask a little bit differently. Lawsuits you've been involved with over the last 5 to 6 years, I would like to see a tracking of those as far as how many they look like. Have you seen any kind of patterns? Are they increasing, decreasing? What the settlements look like? I mean, when we read through your presentation to us, I see code in there for talking to the AG's office. I'd like to have a little more information, just, you know, sort of a vague code to it. The other thing I see on key performance measures is that the number of minorities in state government is flat against population. We're in the low 70s. We've been there for 5 or 6 years, and we stay in the low 70s. I'd like to have an idea of why that's not increasing up to 90, 95, or even 100%. Why our state government doesn't reflect our ethnic population in the state. And we just don't seem to be moving that number, and I have questions about why. So if we can bring those back for the next day or two, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll be happy to do that.
Thank you, Senator. And are you indicating you have a question, Jerry?
I am. I do, Mr. Chair.
Representative Crumbull.
Thank you. I was trying to be subtle. I would like to drill into the strategic learning initiative a little bit more in the learning management system that you're talking about, kind of following up a little bit with Senator Johnson. And that is, and I absolutely agree that training for staff is extremely important. There are a variety of learning management systems that are out there, and I'm sure you've been looking into some of them. And there are such that your trainers would not have to leave Salem. They could do a live online type of program. But I'm also wondering if you have for example, or if you're setting up a train the trainer kind of a program, is that part of this learning management system that you're looking into?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, yes. Train the Trainer is something that we have been involved in trying to set up. And speaking to the learning management system, Department of Human Services has actually purchased a learning management system. And in doing that, the contract was done in such a way that the rest of state government can sign on to that contract. We are in the process of looking at that now and trying to roll out to all agencies so we have a standard learning management system.
So, if I may, Mr. Chair, does that mean that the system is already purchased, and so now you're looking at how that's going to be applied over the and it is a system that will also allow for you to document and track as far as the training that a person receives, how they've scored on a test, what kind of live programs might be able to be done on it, and that sort of thing, I'm assuming?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, that's correct.
Thank you. We are out of time for today, but I do want to go back and make a couple of observations. I'm not looking for any comments or questions on this in relationship to the training. From a somewhat long history of an education in this state, an education at the community college level, if I go back to the Dark Ages, that is somewhere in the very early 1970s, it seemed to me that and it seems to me much the same thing is still taking place today. If the training doesn't originate in Salem, or if the training doesn't originate within the particular agency that happens to be looking to do the training, it isn't training. And in the 1970s at the community college I was at, I put together a program which ran for 2 years, and we hypothesized it's a lot easier to bring training to the people and a lot cheaper than it is to take the people to the training. The program was phenomenally successful, both in terms of who we provided the training to, and we provided some to the Oregon the Oregon Medical Association, for the docs out in the area, it was so successful that I volunteered to give up my other job and work strictly on commission, to keep this on. But unfortunately, the community college funding at that time was, as it is much today, on an FTE type of basis. We had so many FTE out of it, but the poor people weren't making any money off the FTE, and it had to go by the wayside. I think there's a lot of areas and avenues for the state to deliver training of a very high quality, if you wish, as well as at some of the beginning level entryways, and I think you've got an absolutely marvelous source out there. And excuse me, Representative, for butting into your committee on this, but in the community colleges to deliver this training around the state of Oregon. You've got the facilities there. You have personnel there to do a lot of the things that you need to have done. The only problem is, at least in my experience, it's grossly underutilized for us. Thank you. And we would ask you to come back tomorrow, if you would, please, since you're only about a third of the way through your presentation. We're